Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 14th, 2003. Today's session is I Believe in Stuff and Things, Session 1 of Poetry and the Healing Power of Salvage and Detritus, presented by Steve Ringo. The number is RIS 2003-01. Let's listen in.
My name is Steve Ringo, and I welcome you to this first session of 5 sessions on the theme of poetry and the healing power of salvage and detritus. It's an exciting moment for me because I get to teach about 3 different things that I've never taught before, all 3 together. Those 3 being poetry and theology or faith, and this detritus idea or salvage, which we'll try to unfold for you and pull those 3 together. So there are some confluences of thoughts or ideas and thinking, but also some confluences for me of this place called Holden, where over the years I've been many times as a younger person and then other years, and now I haven't been here for about 12 years, so it's been really fun to come back. And it's hard for me to be in this room without thinking of all the ghosts of Carol Hinderly and Mary Hinderly and Herb Brokering and on and on and on, Rich Kemmerer and those folks. So I kind of am showing my age by intoning those names, but that's okay. First, I want to ask you a question. It goes back to the Creed. What's the very first sentence of the Apostles' Creed? I believe in
God, the Father Almighty,
Creator of heaven and earth. Right? That's the first article. Now, once in a while, at Holden and elsewhere, you might want to have a few little theological cards up your sleeve. And I think if you want to think of the 3 articles of faith in that way, it can work. So the first article is, I believe in God, the Father Almighty. And what's God doing in that first article?
Creator.
In some versions, it's maker of heaven and earth, right? Maker is kind of a more Anglo word, I think, which I like. Second article, if you go down to about the middle of that creed, then what happens? I believe in Jesus Christ, His only Son, our Lord, and it goes on to say about what that means, right? So the second article is about Jesus Christ. We're not going to dwell on this, so don't worry. It sounds like confirmation class. But, the third article gets a little trickier. What's this third article start with? Be brave.
I believe.
Okay. Right.
That's tricky.
And the
Holy Spirit.
The Holy Church. So the Spirit and the Church are sort of spoken together in one breath, which is a good word to use, the word breath, because the Spirit is the breath of the Church or the life of the Church and the ongoing life of Christ. So this day-to-day thing going on through the Spirit in the Church, in the body of Christ, becomes the bodies of us out there, which the Spirit kind of carries out. Okay, so recap shows us with first article, who?
God.
Second article,
Jesus
Christ. Third article, we'll say Spirit / Church. If Nils were up here, my son, he'd spell out the word /.
In quotations.
Gotcha. So Church and Spirit. Now, if you want that theological card up your sleeve to try to show people you know a few things, you can say, well, I'm more of a first article Christian. I tend toward the first article. And that might get people like, oh, I need to treat this person with dignity and respect. Not that they shouldn't anyway. Second article, right? So this article stuff. Now, what are the modes? We already talked about this one. The mode of the first article is creation, right? And the second article is about what? What is it about? Not Jesus, but
his life.
Redemption.
Redemption. Who said it?
Oh, your dad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm having a reverse moment of confirmation. Way back. Now the third article, what's going on there? Someone other than her, Ringo. What's the activity?
Sanctification.
That's
great.
Sanctified. We'll make it a verb, all right? So, it's kind of I wanted to start it this way so we could use some of these as sort of like code hooks for the next few the sessions we do to say, well, what's going on with this? A lot of our time is going to be in the first article, which is about
creation.
So, God the Father, creator, maker of heaven and earth. Always go for the more Anglo words, as George Orwell would say anyway. So, let's put that other word here because I wanted it there. Did anybody bother to look up this word detritus? It's a fun word. It sounds very Latin, doesn't it? Not because it is. But it sounds almost like a liturgical thing, like one of those mysterious objects that they hide in the sacristy or something. That's one reason I like it. Are you knitting?
No. I was going to...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Isn't it the gunk on the forest floor?
Okay, good word. You said gunk, I think, didn't you?
Yes.
Gunk. That's an Anglo word, isn't it? Very Anglo. When I looked up detritus in several dictionaries and word study kind of books, one word that is a root or a related word to it is detriment. Kind of interesting. I hadn't noticed that before till last week, actually. Detriment and detritus. There's something connected there. And that would take your mind back to the forest floor, maybe?
Yes.
To lessen or to let go. That letting go, there's a real gospel kind of word, isn't there? To let go. Loose fragments came up in another version of the definition. Loose fragments. Yes?
It's not just the forest floor, is it? I mean, it's anywhere that there's anybody who's going to shed anything.
Oh, any floor, sure.
And so this has a lot of human.
Dead skin?
Yeah.
What do they say when you lose dead skin? Yes. Yeah, I think kind of everywhere. So I took it as one example, not the... loose fragments. Disintegrate, another interesting turn on the idea, maybe. The disintegration adds another facet, doesn't it? If something has disintegrated, it's falling apart. Now I'll just plant a seed in the gospel or in the prophets. Something dies usually before it's reborn. Something has to be forgiven or be confessed, or there's the cycle of death and rebirth and death and life. There's something cool about disintegration there, I think. And it even used the word particles, which comes back to an idea we're going to touch on real soon about matter. Debris, the French word, and materiel. Did I spell it right? Any French students in here? Chris? Materiel or matter or materials, stuff. I like gunk, though. That's my favorite so far. Stuff, gunk. What else might come to mind for you when you think of detritus?
Leftovers,
yeah. That's great. And then when you say leftovers, a little different than leftover, right?
Right.
Think of the fridge, about 11:30 at night. What are what's in there?
Cast offs.
Castaways, cast offs.
I think the shore, that's where I think.
Mm-hmm. Debris, driftwood. What else do they call driftwood? Cast offs. Any other words, not just driftwood, anything? It comes to mind. Just kind of setting some stage work here. All right.
Some people might call it garbage.
Flotsam.
Flotsam, that's
flotsam.
The word. Yeah,
that's flotsam. Good one. Garbage. There are dictionaries here too at any moment if you want to get it. If you need to grab a dictionary, do that. That's encouraged. I want to open with a prayer. Even though I'm kind of open with this stuff, but glasses. And this one came to my attention. To me, this was a new one on the Holden prayer, table prayer thing. So let's use this as our centering prayer. Blessed be God, the creator of all creative hands, which plant and harvest, pack and haul, and hand over for sustenance. Blessed be carrot and cucumber, potato and mushroom, tomato and bean, parsley and peas, onion and thyme, garlic and water. And blessed be fire, and blessed be the people working over the stove, and the deer out the open window. And blessed be God for all, for all, for all. Amen. I hadn't heard that before today at lunch, and I thought, oh, I got to use that. What's going on there? Celebrating. Blessed be God. Blessed be the creative hands. Blessed be this creator. And then what happens? It goes down into the forest floor, into all the gunk and stuff, the cucumbers, the carrots, the potato. Almost sounds funny, doesn't it? Why does that almost sound funny to bless that stuff? Or doesn't it?
It's so ordinary.
Yeah, it's so ordinary, which there's a little promo for that. But all of these books are available to borrow, and I don't know if there's a formal process to get them on hold, like a...
It is possible to put them on hold in our library if you want.
Is that what they call it in the world of libraries? Yeah, so we'll do that. But if you talk to me personally, too, you can, and you look me in the eye, and I can kind of do this to you, then maybe I'll let you take it to your room, too. But anyway, Odes to Common Things. You'll see a little bit of Neruda later today. Before we dive into the poetry itself, I want to show you a few things of what I've been working on. And I remember last summer when Maury and Christine came through Spokane, I was a little sheepish, as I am with other people, to take them into my garage, which has become sort of a studio of sorts. And sheepish because I've got this Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, poetry emphasis, and that's supposed to be some sort of a badge. Big deal, right? And actually, my other friend Ty had told me about 2 years ago when he started seeing this transformation in my garage, said, you sort of stopped writing and now you're doing this, aren't you? I said, yeah, that's kind of true. I'm not writing much poetry. I write a little bit. And I got all sorts of little scraps of ideas for poems like this, but I don't do much with them anymore because I'm doing this kind of thing. All of these things you see were found by Nels and Kai and Maury and I up in the third level yesterday, so I just brought a few things in. But first, I want to show you what kinds of things I've been trying to create, not out of any sense of that these are works of great splendor or great meaning or great anything, as much as they're created of the stuff of creation that is lost or stolen or found or discarded or junk or gunk or salvage or loose or disintegrated, plus
rusted,
in other words, salvage. Very few things that you'll see have been purchased, and if they are, there's usually a Salvation Army kind of source or a garage sale, something like that. But there's something also cool I want you to look at while I show you these about how does nature paint in her own time on these kind of canvases. There's something absolutely wonderful about that, I think, the way nature takes its own time. You could say random. Jackson Pollock could say random too, couldn't he? Maybe not. But and what about the colors that nature makes? What about the colors that we make and then nature does something to it over 5 years? Or this has probably been up there for 40 years, maybe 30, I don't know. And today, most appropriately today, this morning, I was assigned to garbology, and it was a great way to get ready for the afternoon, and thank you, Ed. Ed's a great garbologist. I love the word garbologist. Isn't that just amazing? Garbology, to make it into the logic and the word part of that. This was one of my happy finds in the garbology, as we were dumping out the plastic sacks of everything from everybody's room and all the coffee grounds. It was quite a pleasing array of visual, not so much olfactory senses. But anyway, this was, how often do you see a wood spindle or whatever for a vacuum cleaner? So there it was. And I thought, oh, I can't just let that go into the landfill. Or it would have been burnable. Landfill. Okay. I'm getting there. So anyway, let's do some slides. And I'm not going to stop and say, here we are at the Buddhist temple in Peking, or here we are there, but I'm going to just kind of go a little bit. And if you see something you want to say something about, you can say it or ask it or whatever, all right? Thank you, Sonia. So my goal isn't to explain this, as much to show you what I've been doing with the stuff that you can find anywhere. And I want you to plant a seed here. Standing offer in the next whatever days, if there are small groups or whatever size of people that want to go up and do a little searching for junk, I would be happy to do that with you. I get a little distracted when I do that, but I do find that people, when you bounce this whole endeavor around of finding the stuff, you start to see a little differently, or you see what they see, and then I see what you see, and you say, how about this? Kai came up to me yesterday with a few things up there on the top of the kind of almost gift-like, like, what do you think of this? You know, sort of a little bit vulnerable, you know. So, oh, yeah, that's great. And so forth and so on. And some things you just got to say, well, yeah, you can have that. I'll probably pass on that one. That's all right. What do you recognize?
Some kind of battery. Mm-hmm.
Transformer.
Baseball.
I had to crush most of the baseball to get it in there. That's the cover from a fuse box, by the way. From an old fuse box.
Camera lens.
It's a camera lens from an old slide projector, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are they gauges?
Let's go back. Those are kings from a checkers game.
Glued to
some jar lids. Don't be shy about saying something if you see something that triggers some other thought too, because triggering is very cool instead of literal. Waffle irons with their plates that Crate and Barrel.
So they're not holes, they're
plates.
They're
like salad plates. Yeah. I don't know if Crate and Barrel would be happy or not. Now this one, I need to talk a little bit about this, but at St. Mark's, where I go to church in Spokane, I'm a member there. This is the altar book from the old service, SBH, Service Book and Hymnal. How many are old enough to remember the red hymnal? This morning in the Palestine, Jerusalem thing, they asked how many are over 50, and I was fortunate to not have to raise my hand. I'm close. Anyway, I took these are two baking drawers from Baker's, from an old baker's desk that is a certain height, and very shallow drawers. And I just put some found items, so it's kind of a, what do you call it, street cover there. But the service book is arranged, so it was the altar book, a little bigger, right? It's got the red rubrics all over it, so some of the psalms are in red, has some stylization, and I made it so you can turn any page to, if you want a psalm. And recently gave this away, but I had it by the front door, because I think the front door of your home, you know, what better way to have to welcome people with the word there, open to whatever. I think for me, this one's emotional too. Almighty God, our Maker, there's that Anglo word again, Maker and Redeemer. Which article is Redeemer?
Second.
There you go. Good. Almighty God, our Maker and Redeemer, we poor sinners confess unto thee. Is that it? I can't read it. But how many times? I think I missed church 3 times before I was a sophomore in high school. So to me, I grew up with that. Such a mantra. And this whole opening of church, the first thing, how you start your life, how you start your day. What does this say? It's a little, maybe too literal here, but it says awe. Questions, comments? Talking too much, huh? This one is an old hat box. We'll see. Focus nose? No, maybe? Lazy Susan, so it turns.
There.
Just a kind of an angle iron of some sort.
What's
looks like a tassel.
Yeah, it is. The hat box had a tassel to cinch the lid on top of it.
Okay.
This is called Brush with Death.
Oh.
I have titles for all these, but I'm not going to belabor that.
I think of a snake.
Yeah. Just a hammerhead in a kind of Japanese, ornamental Japanese box. You'll see a hammer theme once in a while. This is called Spit, Salt, and Fire. Where the fire would be here, right? I love the dappled thing that nature did with the handle of the hammer, not to mention the head. And there's something fun about ball peens. Yeah, I can't see these without hearing those words. That's the poetry in me, where when I see these, I hear the word peen, ball peen. Something fun about a ball peen hammer. Spark plug. Some of the words, they're just fun. So you can have fun with the words while you're doing this sort of thing. The painting, isn't that Jacob Lawrence, Brenna?
Yes.
Jacob Lawrence, a Harlem Renaissance painter, Negro Leagues ball player, ready to throw a pitch.
So is this a concrete poem?
No. Poem? Oh, I see what you're saying. No, I wouldn't think of it that way, but you can't. That's
what's
okay.
What is the orange?
That's just a piece of metal from, I forget where.
Looks like a heel.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like an orthotic type of thing, but it's something mechanical. Minimalistic. This is actually about 3.5 feet square, so it's big. And this one is solid, like almost half inch steel, so it's very heavy. This one's a little lighter, but I mean, this one my favorite. It doesn't mean anything as far as doesn't for you, but it's one of mine. Now this one, the what do you call it?
Scrapple.
What is it?
Putty knife.
There it is. Thank you. Putty knife. Really gone to see, really, really. It is, it's peeling, but you can peel away layers, it's so gone. Sometimes I put a little, I have an 11 ball from the cube billiard game. Sometimes I put it in there, sometimes I don't like it, so I take it out.
I identify with that spring.
Okay.
Sort of a worn out spring.
Whoa. Now, what do you say when that's your mother making a comment? You leave it alone, right? So, thank you for sharing. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of fun. This one's actually fairly small, about 5-6 inches tall. Industrial sized fuse here that's been burned out. In other words, a fuse's job is to be there until it's needed. When it's needed, it's done. So it's a gone fuse. It's used, it's dead. But I reclaimed it. We'll get to the idea of reclamation or redemption, second article, next session or the one after, I forget which. This is a triptych. 3 baker's drawers I've found. Whenever I can find baker's drawers, I grab them because they're shallow. And they're not so deep as far as how you don't have to look into it so much. It's called Rat Trap Triptych. You got two, these are very fun. I'm sad to give these away, but altimeter gauges from 1930s airplanes. And they actually, the needle just tilts like mad. It's fun. Griffin is a St. Mark's thing. I dedicated this one to the congregation of St. Mark's in Spokane, though they probably don't really care or get that, or that's okay. But sort of.
Is that an old phone dial?
Yeah, I pulled it out of an old phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a green thing going on throughout, maybe life, I don't know.
What is that on the top?
That's an old heavy metal frog for flowers.
Oh.
Now they're pretty much plastic, aren't they?
Yeah.
or what are they made of now? Plastic?
Not the cool building, but the needles have to be metal.
Yeah, the whole thing is metal. It's probably lead. Mm-hmm. It's really heavy. So, anyway. That's fine. This is my 9/11 deal. I don't really know that I can explain it, but these are springs that dangle freely and move. There you go, Nels. Did you do that? Can you focus? You're amazing. I just thought it into focus. This is some lead from some old canister. Springs are fun. Springs show up every now and then. Something about a spiral, maybe. That's one of those triangular architectural drafting rulers. Words and measurements and meters and gauges are kind of fun for my eyeball. Kind of gone. There's another phone. What's left of the phone? That's about 2 feet wide, maybe a foot and a half. It's almost square.
Did you weld this together?
No, I'm going to need to learn how to weld, though. A lot of times I use iron wire or steel wire to wrap it on, or you get a piece of wood behind this and screw the wood onto the back of the screen and then screw into the phone if there's a place to. So I've been doing lots of different fastening techniques, but I do think I need to learn how to weld.
Tell them why you did that originally.
I've been resisting welding. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I resisted welding because it's so permanent. And once you do it, you very hard to undo, I think. Is there a welder in here? Anyway, I think you can undo it, but it changes. You got a mark on there, but that's all right. Well, there are things I'm going to need to weld. So, just to finish at St. Mark's, has got a brother who does a lot of welding in his backyard or in his garage, so he said I could come and learn. I'm going to do that. This is a favorite of mine, too. Maybe put some flowers in a frog, or who knows what in there. Something like Martha Stewart.
How large is that?
The round object at the base is about just under a foot. I think the industrial, we say post-industrial and post-modern now, but the industrial age and all the design that went into engineering and design of the industrial age is really amazing. And, you know, just to see, just as pure design, there's a lot going on in the industrial, used to say industrial arts, right, in school. That's the same one, a different angle. Kind of did a series of these guys. That's a grinder's brush in the middle. Waffle iron. Japanese no character. That's an old heat register cover. As you can see, I use these things for backgrounds. So I'll find a background that allows me to do something with it. That's usually where I start, is finding a background or some kind of a frame, and then I start piecing what might go with this, what might work, what do I like. And this same one with a white background to give you a little idea. You got your numbers on the fuse breakers are numbered too. This thing actually flips up and down if you wanted to. Susan Sontag, there's a tiny little story, and then you have an oil gauge. Susan Sontag, I did it in gradations of dark to light, but she and Yoko Ono, before they were famous, both were friends of Joseph Cornell in New York, actually in Queens, where Joseph Cornell, some of you may have heard of Joseph Cornell, a very eccentric, strange man who made boxes, little kind of romantic boxes with odds and ends inside of these boxes. You've probably seen some of his work, but she was a close friend and one of the few living friends left that has actually written a little bit about him, too. That one's about 4 feet tall, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Oil gum.
How large is that one?
How big?
Uh-huh.
Maybe 9 inches across, so it's not very big.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, let's look at some poetry, and then maybe we can find ways to integrate all these various ideas. Thank you so much. Now, I don't pretend think we're going to get through this whole thing, but this is my way of giving you a little booklet of poems to take with you, too. So whatever we do get through today, that's all right. And when we don't, you have something to look over. And I like the way they said it at the orientation, to be in charge of your own renewal and be in charge of your own retreat, your own journey through this place and this time and whatever that means in your life. So maybe some of these might help you. Yeah? Didn't get one?
Oh, yes.
What's that about? Wasn't for me. Are they?
They're coming this
coming
way.
Coming around? Now, as we look at these, and we're going to start at the beginning and then start jumping around, some of you probably know more poetry than I do, and that's cool. Some of you have been longtime lovers of poetry. If you're not, these are a few tips what to look out for. I said it that way because it connotes a danger. Look out. Sometimes it's like the scripture when people read the lesson for the reading for today is said, oh, wow, that's the signal to sleep, right? When really it should be a yellow light flashing, danger, caution. This could be a big deal. You know, this could change your life, right? This could be important. Listen. So look out for what? Look out for a key line. Now, I always like to invite people when they read poetry, find a line, just one line that you like. And that can be enough. Or a word. What are the words you like? And I separated those two for a reason, because the key line might not have the words you like, and that's okay. But look for a line that jumps out at you, words that jump out at you that might just even be fun or intriguing or mysterious. And then look for the surface action or the surface mood or the surface image or pictures. What's going on the surface of the poem? That's important to know. And I don't mean surface in a pejorative sense, that it's less, it's just different. But then eventually you get to a deeper something from most poems. There should be something to say. And then repetition is crucial. What's repeated? Repetition in a poem is a major, major sign. Look here. It's like, here, flash. And titles. People gloss over titles a lot with novels and stories and poetry, but the titles, a good writer will put a lot of thought into that title, and it tells something. It's a tip, or a tips you, it's some idea there. And before we dive in, the last thing I'll say is the wonder of poetry for me is the blending of heart and mind that poetry does. I don't know if there's much else, I don't think there's anything else that does the same way. Art and different forms of art do that, obviously, but I think poetry has its very own way of integrating and pulling together the mind and the heart, the feeling and the thinking, the idea plus the emotion. So keep that in mind too. How does that poem draw me in from my mind? Or how does that poem draw me in from my emotion? Or both? A good poem will do both. A great poem, perhaps. So, we've done the Articles of Faith. Recap shows us with first article.
God's creation.
Second article.
Jesus' redemption.
Third article.
Spirit.
All right. Now, Marianne Moore, first poem here. Appropriately about poetry. I'll read this one, but I will ask some of you if you're interested in reading a poem to read. Here we go. Poetry. I, too, dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Reading it, however, with a perfect contempt for it, one discovers in it, after all, a place for the genuine. Hands that can grasp, eyes that can dilate, hair that can rise if it must. These things are important, not because a high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them, but because they are useful. When they become so derivative as to become unintelligible, the same thing may be said for all of us, that we do not admire what we cannot understand. The bat holding on upside down or in quest of something to eat. Elephants pushing, a wild horse taking a roll, a tireless wolf under a tree, the immovable critic twitching his skin like a horse that feels a flea, the baseball fan, the statistician. Nor is it valid to discriminate against business documents and school books. All these phenomena are important. One must make a distinction. However, when dragged into prominence by half poets, the result is not poetry. Nor till the poets among us can be literalists of the imagination, above insolence and triviality, can present for inspection imaginary gardens with real toads in them, shall we have it. In the meantime, if you demand on the one hand the raw material of poetry in all its rawness, and that which is on the other hand genuine, you are interested in poetry. Impressions, thoughts, queries, statements. Did you find a line or a words that you like?
The first line.
Okay, can you read it?
I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all.
All this fiddle. That's good, isn't it? All this fiddle.
I liked just the beginning because I thought how she did, I too dislike it. She has us, she says that we're agreeing with her kind of already.
Right.
She implies that we're together on this.
Yeah.
So then you go into her poem.
Good. I like that.
With her, you know.
And she uses the title to just put right into that line, doesn't she? So you know the subject, it, is already, she's talking about poetry. Someone else had a hand up. Nels?
I like, when dragged into prominence by half poets, the result is not poetry.
Okay.
Kind of like it has to be all or nothing.
All or nothing? Good. I like that. Terry?
The power, to me, some power words are the physical edges, the grasp, the dilating, just really pull me into the poem.
Good. Yeah. The word genuine comes near the beginning and then again near the end. Any other of these kind of things, the key words or key lines, anybody? Yeah, Mark.
Well, I was going to say one of my key lines was the pupils that dilate also.
Yeah, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a copy?
No.
Speak up.
Thank you.
In the second stanza on the front page, high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them. That's kind of a danger, isn't it? For me, I know when that's part of why I chose this to start. I pick around on the banjo and the guitar, and it's very hobby-ish, so it's not anything to. You know, there's no bravado to say that, but having grown up through the folk music period, you know how folk musicians will often spend 15 minutes or 10 minutes talking about a song, and then they play a three-minute song, right? There's a problem with that, isn't there? And that's the problem about talking about the poem, yeah.
Well, when Marianne Moore was writing, she was, in part, I think she's arguing with the old school poets, and that you know, they were saying it isn't really poetry because it doesn't have a form that is acceptable with meter and rhyme and all this sort of thing. And so she's, I just like it. It's harder. Mm-hmm. I think this kind of poetry is a lot harder to read than a lot of what we think of. Mm-hmm. You know, people still say to me, I'm sure to you too, but it doesn't rhyme. It isn't a poem unless it rhymes. And I don't know where that came from, because that's not true of the history of poetry. But I think she's partly saying that it's hard to read this stuff. You know, you're looking for, you have to look, as you say, you have to look for those words and those key ideas and
what
these things mean, instead of having a poem that tells you what it means.
Right, I agree. Well stated. Even sometimes I challenge people when they say that about rhyme to look for internal rhyme, that where a lot of the modern poets have really placed the rhyme in ways where it isn't so obvious and seemingly stilted, maybe, so that the rhyme might still be there, or even slack rhyme or sound rhymes, but still the music of poetry has to be there to be poetic, I think. But maybe it doesn't have to be da-da, 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 da-da. And it can be that, I'm not saying it can't be. But obviously, by what you see, I have chosen his poems. That's my bias, too, mm-hmm. The poems I've chosen. And Christine?
Oh, I was just going to say, you're asking for keywords. I love her use in the first line that Andres talked about, her use of the word fiddle.
Yeah.
Fiddle. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, my grandmother used to say, oh, fiddle that. Uh-huh. And so it's a word that seems to dismiss it, perhaps, mm-hmm. but a fiddle is also a violin, mm-hmm. and my uncle is a professional violinist, and he calls his violin his fiddle,
right.
But it's a gorgeous Italian-made violin that has an aesthetic and a beauty, mm-hmm. and when he plays it, you know, a depth to it that poetry has. Mm-hmm. But so with that word fiddle,
right.
she's doing what I was just talking about, drawing us in, that this is not that big a deal or not that important thing, but
there's a lot. The word brings out a lot. I think,
is
and for you, it's great.
Yeah.
I like the picture of the imaginary garden that Will told us.
Yeah, so do I. Is she quoting somebody there? I mean, you know what?
She's putting it in those quote marks, isn't she? Imaginary gardens. Literalists of the imagination is in single quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she must be, but I don't know where.
Okay.
I didn't find that.
I like that phrase too.
Literalists of the imagination. It sounds kind of Wallace Stevens-ish, but I don't know if it is. And then she comes back to it in imaginary gardens with real. There's a turning it on its head, right? The real toads. Usually it's the real garden with the imaginary toads that's kissing the so and so. But what's she really saying here? What do you think? We're gonna go to the next one pretty soon next, but what do you think she's saying about poetry?
Well, she ends by saying, I think, what she means in that last stanza.
Yeah, I think she's...
That, in the meantime, if you demand, on the one hand, the raw material of poetry in all its rawness, and that which is, on the other hand, genuine, you're interested in poetry.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, raw and genuine. I chose this for that word raw. That was my key word when I saw this one. And imaginary gardens. It's a place to grow your and water your imagination, and yet be genuine, not phony. Because there's a lot of phoniness in some so-called imaginative stuff. And maybe that's okay. Maybe eventually it leads to something that's genuine. We don't always know what's going to be genuine, do we? And it's probably better to let the genuine come out instead of, now I'm going to be genuine, you know, like, now I'm going to be funny sort of thing. Let's go on. I want to go next to, flip down a ways, almost to the end.
I should have stapled these, huh? Ode to Things, Pablo Neruda. It's if you go to the very back page and then turn back 2 pages, you'll be there. There's short little columns that look like E.E. Cummings. Pablo Neruda was the Nobel Prize winner, so even though this looks a little frivolous or a little kind of, what's the word? Yeah, it's actually, I think there's a lot here. And you'll see another of his poems in the next few days. Oh, it comes from this book.
Oh, it's someone translated them?
Yeah, it's been translated. I'm sorry. But I will do that. Let's give credit right now. Ken Krabbenhoff, translator. I do have the Spanish of this too in the book, if you wish. Who would like to read this one? Anybody? Please.
Ode to Things. I have a crazy, crazy love of things. I like pliers and scissors. I love cups, rings, and bowls, not to speak, of course, of hats. I love all things, not just the grandest, also the infinitely small thimbles, spurs, plates, and flower vases. Oh yes, the planet is sublime. It's full of pipes weaving handheld through the tobacco smoke, and keys, and salt shakers, everything. I mean that it's made by the hand of man. Every little thing, shapely shoes of fabric. Yet each new bloodless birth of gold, eyeglasses, carpenter's nails, brushes, clocks, compasses, coins, and the so soft softness of chairs. Mankind has built oh so many perfect things, built them of wool and of wood, of glass and of rope, remarkable tables, ships and stairways. I love all things, not because they are passionate or sweet smelling, but because I don't know. Because this ocean is yours and mine, these buttons and wheels and little forgotten treasures, fans upon whose feathers love has scattered its blossoms, glasses, knives, and scissors, all bear the trace of someone's fingers, of their handle or surface, the trace of a distant hand, lost in the depth of forgetfulness. I pause in houses, streets, and elevators, touching things, identifying objects that I secretly covet. This one because it rings, that one because it's as soft as the softness of a woman's hip, and that one there for its deep sea color, its velvet feel. Oh, irrevocable river of things, no one can say that I loved only fish, or the plants of the jungle and the field, that I loved only those things that leap and climb, desire and survive. It's not true. Many things conspired to tell me the whole story. Not only did they touch me, or my hand touched them, they were so close that they were a part of my being. They were so alive with me that they lived half my life and will die half my death.
Thank you. Wonderful job. I think there's a wonderful way he doesn't just list all these things. And it very much reminds me of Whitman, the way Whitman lists things. bing, 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 grass, trees, blah, 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 just litanies of lists. But the mood and the feeling that I get from this poem is that we are part of the whole, not just part of an organization of a creation. And I'm not saying Neruda is a Christian first article person, but I'm taking it there myself, which is your freedom. When you read a poem, you take it where it takes you. But that I am part of the essence of this creation, not the organization or the institution. And I think we do so much separate ourselves from the world, the animal world, the world of things. We think of ourselves as these, as human. And I'm saying we, that's imperial, I know. But in modern society, that's really hard not to. Other thoughts on this? I could go on this one, but I want to hear what you thought of this poem.
Well, I love how his lists combine human-made things made by the hand of man, as he said, with the little thing. But then also, because this ocean is yours.
It goes big.
Yeah, very big. And it's soft as the softness of a woman's hip. Mm-hmm. You know, just a physical, human physical thing. Or the deep sea color or the velvet feel. You feel the human hand, you feel God's hand,
Well, I'm interested in the way he wrote it too. You know, our tendency is to write
longer lines.
Longer lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what it means.
And
he must have something about the way he wanted us to.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at each thing. Mm-hmm. Each thing is really special. Mm-hmm. It sets it apart.
That's a good way to see it. Yeah. Almost a slideshow of words in a way, separate, but then it keeps them all together too.
Yeah, well, that's what I noticed, is like the pliers and the scissors are things to make other things with, the cups and the bowls are all circular.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the sounds. I think the translator did a marvelous job too, because the sounds work in English. It's almost a whole new poem to translate something like this.
That section where it starts with no one can say that I loved only fish. I just don't like that.
It's not what you expect.
Yeah. Fish.
Right. Or the plants of the jungle. It's not true. Many things conspired. There's a word. Conspired. It's like the hound of heaven or something. To tell me the whole story. Not only did they touch me. There's a lot of tactile sensory imagery here. And then it ends with death. The irrevocable river, I take as something leading toward life, leading toward death, the irrevocable part.
Mm-hmm. I like how he says, I love all things, not because of passion, so he's not, but because I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's, when he's just putting it in a list, it makes him seem like, at first glance, you know what a button is, you know this, and what he's saying, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop and
the mystery.
Question it all, we're not as all-knowing as that imperial view.
That's good. Well, I thought of a Chinese scroll when I thought of this, one in particular that came to me from the National Chinese Museum, this huge scroll. All the nature and mountains and flowing and all the detail, and then down in the way, way bottom corner, this little sage of a man, you know, like that tall. But that's very Chinese, very Chinese. The people are always there. There's almost always a person, but they're small, and they're always in wonder, and they're always in awe, and they're part of. But you look at a lot of art from the Western cultures and what's going on now, it's
another thing that he did that I liked was he says I pause in houses, streets, and elevators, touching things, identifying objects that I secretly covet, and that's me. I mean, I look at those things and I would just love to have it in my home.
Even just to touch them. I don't know, my mom said, and she goes to some stores and tries things on, knowing she's not ever going to buy it, or maybe can, but haven't you said that, Mom? Or you just go and try it on just to wear it, even if you wore it extra once. Have to feel it. Yeah. I don't know. That's okay.
There's a section at the end that says, not only did they touch me or my hand touched them, they were so close, they were a part of my being.
My being, yeah. They were so alive with me that they lived half my life and will die half my death. Yeah, that's amazing. Life and death becomes almost seamless there. How come?
It's your mom. I mean, she loves the things that I love. I was the fish.
That's cool. That's good. Shall we do one more?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go with a simpler one. How about, let's go to the, anybody here from Minnesota? Let's do that one then. I knew it. A blessing. James Wright. Minnesota shows up once in a while in his poetry. Anyone want to read?
Yeah, I know. I'll read this one. A blessing. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass. And the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead. And the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom.
Thank you. Beautiful. I like the boundaries that come through this poem. He barely touches on these boundaries, but without making them boundaries in the poem. The first one, I think, comes where it says, they have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step, there's the boundary, over the barbed wire into the pasture. It's almost a C.S. Lewis sort of Narnia thing where you go through that closet door and you're in another world in Rochester, Minnesota there. And what's happening? It's with these animals. And I like the way he doesn't turn the animals into people, as there's a kind of personification, but it's not personification as much as animification, or that's not a word, but the animals do something that's relating to these people in a way that's still their own. This edge, this boundary, this place of perception, there's what kinds of things are going on here, surface or under the surface for you.
I like the title because that's what all what this is, what he's seeing and receiving as a blessing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's a blessing. That's what's going on. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
There's the love that's repeated, the home,
and
at
the
home.
The poem itself.
Yeah.
Every time I read this, it's a blessing to me. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's describing a blessing to him. Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of affection. Mm-hmm. Just, but it's not sappy, I don't think. It could almost be, but nuzzle, what a word.
Sensual.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's very sensual, and then there's this line right in the middle, there is no loneliness like theirs.
Right. And whoa.
And the idea just
kind of a sad note there in a way, but not. Suddenly, what happens? I realize. It's almost like self-consciousness comes back, and he has this thought of, to realize something is a brain thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, I realize if I stepped out of my body, it doesn't say out of my mind, it's my body, I would break into blossom. This reminds me of Luther's, if I could comprehend a grain of wheat, is that what it is? I would die of wonder. I think Luther said that. Is that right, Dad? Something like that? Just say yes. To wrap this up, because we're out of time, and I knew we wouldn't get through all these. The healing theme is not hard to get to as far as the grace of God coming through all of these articles of our belief, our faith. But I want to just personally say how much art, my family, my wife, my kids, the freedom to have that kind of joviality about life and finding the junk around you and seeing the rest of the world as a lot of, you know, all of us being sort of lost in junky, maybe, in a sense, or junky, which is the word somebody used, that there's healing in just gathering it. It doesn't have to be changed. It doesn't have to be polished. It doesn't have to be restored. It can just be gathered and celebrated. And that is so healing, just as itself. And just almost opening your eyes to be blessed is really all it takes, maybe, to see. And you don't have to see that things that I see. I'm just showing you what I see. If you see beauty your own way, everybody does. But the more we can see it through, you know, with each other and expand that Neruda kind of way of seeing it, the more we can share that sense of beauty, the more affection, the more nuzzle, the more love, the more aha and wonder, then the more it's going to be a healing world. It happens from below up, not from up here down, I think. But thank you for being here. And come and borrow a book, or I will put these on reserve too. Thank you very much. You've been wonderful.
Thank you.